Friday the 8th of June, Rabbi Rashi Simon, Perspectives on Parsha Shlach.
It's a pleasure for me to be here this morning once again, and I've been warned in the past that I shouldn't begin with too many words of tribute to my host, so I'll dispense with the plaudits, but just to say that I'm always amazed at the level of interest and the sustained interest over the series of weeks and months, extending into years, that this Torah way has accomplished, and it's, I suppose, a tribute to everybody here this morning, but especially to the organizers. This week's Parsha, Shlach Lecha, of course, is dominated by the well-known and still profoundly enigmatic incident of sending the spies into Eretz Canaan. The purpose of the mission, the Havamina, as we would say in Talmudic argot, is a mystery. Hashem instructs Moshe to send these spies, and the mission is ill-fated from the outset and ends in a historic tragedy. And even all of these centuries later, I think still remains somewhat of a mystery. I want to just share with you, by way of opening shot, so to speak, the insight of one of the Mefarshim, if I can use the term, a philological analysis of the words that the Torah uses. We know this incident by the term chet. We're supposed to speak English, aren't we? Is that right? I don't know. People looking perplexed. Have I got the wrong language? Philological, the study of language and the derivation of words. We know this event by the name of the Chet HaMeraglim. And yet, if you look closely, you don't have to look closely, but I'm sure it's familiar to everybody here already, the term that the Torah uses initially is not the term Meragel, but a different term. And the Ksava Kabbalah draws attention to it. The parasha begins, V'yadavar Hashem l'Moshe l'mor, Shlach Lecha Anashim, what's the next word? V'yasuru. Now, the word meragel does have a verbal form. Meragel really is a noun, but liragel is to spy out. It doesn't say to spy out. It says, V'yasuru es eretz kanana shanino sinli v'nei Yisrael, ish echad, ish echal matea v'osab, tishlach l'kol nasivahem. So, the Torah says that Hashem instructed Moshe, shlach lecha anashim, one man from each tribe, people of stature. And then the Torah enumerates the names of the representatives of each of the 12 Shvatim. Eile shmos anashim asher shalach Moshe lasur es haaretz v'yikra Moshe l'Hoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. And we'll look more closely at Yehoshua ben Nun shortly. But we find in each case the word lasur, v'yasur es eretz Canaan, asher shalach Moshe lasur es haaretz. So haksava hakabbalah, Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, one of the great Mefarshim of the 19th century. He lived in Königsberg. He was the Rav in Königsberg in Prussia, Germany. And he wrote a very influential book, commentary, by the name of Haksava HaKabbalah, which has as its objective the demonstration of the integration between the Ksav, that is to say, the Torah Shebe Ksav, the HaKabbalah, and the tradition. And he wants to show how it's only through an understanding of the Torah Shebaal Peh that we can appreciate the Torah Shebaal Ksav, and the two are not only inseparable, but they're even integrated into a single entity. A bit similar to the Malbim, he was a contemporary of the Malbim, and he had, I would say, a similar agenda, which is to confront the Maskilim on their own terms, because the Maskilim were very fond and very adept at interpreting and understanding the Hebrew language and the grammar, and they criticized the many of the writers and the scholars of the previous generations for neglecting that, and therefore the Ksava Kabbalah and certain others, Hirsch and Malbim, devoted a lot of energy and I might say ingenuity to a close study of the language of the Torah. So with this introduction, I want to share with you what he says here. Yesh hevdel ben tar l'meragel. Truly, he quotes another mefarish, he quotes someone else and he elaborates upon it. Ha'ish asher yasur hu mevakesh hatov. The word latur really in common with the English word tatur. You know, the noun form of latur is tayar, and I'm sure everyone here knows that a tayar is a tourist. In modern Hebrew, tayar is a tourist. In fact, the words are so closely related, latur and the word tour, as in T-O-U-R, that I think the similarity can hardly be coincidental. But be that as it may, he says that there's a big difference between latur and leragea. He says a tourist comes to investigate, to explore that which is good, that which is pleasant, that which is impressive, that which is maybe inspiring. When a tourist goes to a holiday destination, he wants to see the beauty there. He wants to see the architectural beauty, the historical monuments. He wants to see the natural beauty. He wants to be dazzled and inspired, and therefore he seeks out the places of beauty and the most impressive parts of that land. Now he gives a few examples. Lasula hem menuchat. We had in last week's parsha. Lasula hem makom lachanoschem el eretz asher tarti lahem. Which means Lidof Achar Hatanugim. The Torah warns us at the end of the parasha, do not go astray. Latur means to be seduced or to follow that which is alluring, that which is so attractive. Uvehefech hamaragel yivakeshes hara, but a spy is looking for the exact opposite. A spy and a tourist have certain things in common. They both go to foreign lands, maybe places they've never been before, places that are not so well understood by the people in their homeland. But of course, once they get there, their agenda is completely different. The meragel, the spy, looks for the seedy parts of town, the underworld. He wants to make contact with the black market. He wants to know where he can buy contraband, or where he can buy illicit information, whom he can bribe, whom he can corrupt. So he seeks out all of the negative parts of the land. Meragli matem, as Yosef had accused his brothers. Liros es erevas haaretz basem. וכן הלו בעבור לחקור ולהפוך ולהגל הארץ בו עבדך אליך וכן וירגל בעבדך אל אדוני המלך. And even the pasuk לרגל על לשונו, which is a pasuk that refers to someone who's a gossip monger, לא רגל על לשונו, because someone who is a gossip monger, someone who's looking to spread rumors or maybe even pass on information which may be true, but it's hostile, it's damaging, it's derogatory. So all of this is related to the word liragel. Miragel is a spy. Kulam inyanim gilui hagenus v'hara. So says the Ksav HaKabbalah, hine Moshe Rabbeinu b'shalchol shnei anashim l'ros eretz Kanan. He says, what was the whole purpose of it? What was the need for it? As I said at the very beginning, it's a mystery. What was the intention? What was the havamina in this whole mission? HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already told them that he's taking them to a land flowing with milk and honey. He said, what do they need spies for? And if the land is full of people who are very powerful and very ferocious and very well-fortified cities, so what? He says, Lo ma'alev lo mori. He says, V'Hashem yilachem lahem. Hashem is going to conquer the people of that land anyway. Doesn't matter what kind of fortifications they have. So what was the whole purpose of this enterprise? So he says, Shalcham latur es haaretz leman yiru es tova. He sent them that they should tour, and I use the word in English, tour the land in order to see all the beauty spots and how wonderful, how verdant, and how productive, and how wondrous is this land. V'yagidu kevodah El Am Haaretz. So they will come back with a first-hand eyewitness account, and they will tell the people, maybe of lesser faith, V'yechazku yedeim alechas acharei Hashem. That was the whole purpose of it. But unfortunately, for reasons that remain shrouded in mystery and have been the subject of much exegetical ingenuity, they had their own ideas. The Meraglim actually were not dispatched as spies at all. They were dispatched, if you like, latur es haaretz, as tourists. But for some reason, they adopted a very different agenda. Hine hishchisu, hisivu alila, v'yavchu machsheves sholcham. Alken anachdu korim lahem b'shem miraglim, and that's the name by which we all remember them, because that's what they became, that's what they chose to become. Only later on, in Dvarim, when the Torah briefly recapitulates the events, it says, v'yavo adnachal eshkol,
V'yiraglu osa. Because then the Torah, in retrospect, is describing what actually happened. That they went, finally, when they arrived, they took the form and they adopted the agenda of spies to find out what is negative about the land. Ki ve'emes ken haya hadavar, ki ma'aseh hamaraglim asu v'lo ma'aseh tarim, gam ki lasur nishluchu v'lo l'ragel. So this is what the Ksava Kabbalah says, and I think this is a wonderful approach to understanding the difference between the intention of this mission and how it tragically unfolded as a consequence. This is by way, as I say, of opening remarks. What I want to look at more closely is the role and the nature, the personality of the most important, the most famous one among the 12 spies, and of course this is Yehoshua. And the Torah says that his name was really Hoshea ben Nun, and Moshe called him Yehoshua, even though we know him in the Torah mostly as Yehoshua, but it seems that the name was changed at this point. V'kra Moshe lo Hoshea ben Nun Yehoshua. So Rashi famously says that Moshe Rabbeinu changed the name of his Talmud and his disciple, you know, his valet, his constant companion. He changed his name from Hoshea. At this time, he changed it to Yehoshua. He added the Yud, which represents, of course, the Shem Hashem. And in this way, he became Yehoshua. And as Rashi famously says, Ka Yoshiacha Me'atzach Meragim, may the Almighty save you from the plot of the spies. Moshe knew that Yehoshua was just one person, you know, although he was righteous, but every person is at risk of being influenced by others, and therefore he prayed for him. Of course, the question is asked, what about Kalev? Why didn't Moshe pray for Kalev? So, it seems he didn't need to pray. For some reason, Kalev and Yehoshua were able to withstand the influence of the other Meraglim, and they stood by their guns, and they gave the accurate report, and the faithful report, and of course they were rewarded for their faithfulness. But Moshe felt the need to pray for Yehoshua and not for Kalev. And although on the one hand, to have the name of Hashem associated with a person's identity and to have Moshe pray for him is a wonderful thing, no doubt. But at the same time, there's an implication of a certain weakness on the part of Yehoshua. If Kalev did not require that change of name, did not require that tefillah on his behalf, and Yehoshua did, then in a certain sense, there's an implication that maybe Yehoshua is a bit vulnerable, and I'd like to explore that in a moment. Just before we do, though, I want to tell you what one of the Mefarshim says about why Moshe didn't have to pray for Kalev. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asks this question, many of the Mefarshim do. So he says that, well, Kalev had an advantage that Yehoshua didn't have. What was the advantage of Kalev?
He was an extrovert. He was a man of the world.
He was a man of the world. I don't know why we have evidence of that. You think so? He was a diplomat. Kalev was a diplomat. Well, I mean, this is all speculative, you know. He was a man of the world. It's true that Yehoshua is Yoshev Ohel, but Lo Mashvitocha Ohel. Okay, Kalev was from Shevet Yehuda, maybe a bit more outgoing, but we know for a fact that Kalev had a very righteous wife. It was Miriam. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have to pray for Kalev because he knew that Kalev had such a wonderful wife that she will ensure that he remains on the straight and narrow. He didn't need to pray for him. I have a slightly more cynical interpretation of this as well, though. I don't know whether any women who are listening on the Kol HaLashon or Dial Adaf or any of the internet, but my slightly more cynical interpretation is that Moshe, I see Johnny is worried, that Moshe knew that Kalev was his brother-in-law. You see, Yehoshua was his Talmud. So when it comes to family members, you can't expect to influence them. And probably Moshe felt that Yehoshua maybe he can influence, but Kalev, he can't have any influence over him. He's next of kin.
sometimes some of the overly zealous people in my line of work, working with Balei Tshuva, we do encounter this phenomenon of someone who seeks to influence family members, and unfortunately it's not always successful. But that's truthfully, that's a slightly cynical comment, and I'm sure that what Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says has much more truth to it than my ruminations. Be that as it may, I want to explore, in a serious vein, I want to explore what is it about Yehoshua that made Moshe Rabbeinu feel he needs a bit of extra assistance. He needs some to invoke the divine influence here to associate the Shem Hashem so that he won't be influenced by the Atzat Meraglim. We know that Yehoshua becomes the successor to Moshe Rabbeinu. And in Parshas Pinchas, when Hashem tells Moshe it's the end of the road for him, he's not going to take the people into the land, he says, you can see it from afar, v'shama lo savo. So right away, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, v'daber Moshe el Hashem lemor. I think it's the only pasuk in the Torah that way. V'daber Hashem el Moshe lemor, about hundreds of times. V'daber Moshe el Hashem is rare. V'daber is a strong lashon. It's almost kind of turning the tables. As if Moshe says, Hashem, you've been telling me, you've been giving me messages, you've been instructing me, you know, all these years. Well, I got something to say to you. V'adeber Moshe el Hashem lemor. He says, Yifkot Hashem l'kei ruchas l'chol basar. If I'm going to be retired and you're not going to allow me to finish my mission, then please don't abandon these people. Do not leave them katzon asher ein lehem ro'eh. But rather, Yifkot Hashem l'kei ruchas l'chol basar ish al ha'eda. Appoint a man over this congregation. Asher yetzei lifnehem, v'asher yavod lifnehem, v'asher yotzi'em, v'asher yivi'em, who will go out before them, who will bring them in. Not like me, that I took them out, but he wouldn't let me bring them in. So, choose someone who will finish the job. V'lo si'adas Hashem katzon asher ein lehem ro'eh. V'im Hashem el Moshe. So Hashem responds, kach lachas Yehoshua, I've got just a man for you. Yehoshua binun ish asher ruach bo. And this turn of phrase, ruach, is significant. Moshe said, Yifkot Hashem Elokei HaRuchos L'chol Basar, and Hashem responded, take Yehoshua Benun Ish Hashem Ruach Bo. So, as I'm sure you know, Rashi says, Elokei HaRuchos L'chol Basar, that Moshe said, Ribono Shel Olam, Galui Lefanecha Da'ato Shel Kol Echad Ve'Echad Ve'Ein Andorim Zeh Lezeh. You know that every person has his own ideas, his own personality, his own perspective, his own opinion, his own idiosyncrasies, his own foibles, his own mishagasin, as we say in good English. And therefore, he says, you have to choose someone, ve'enan domin zeleze, mane alehim manhi shehi sovel kol echad v'echad lefi da'ato. Choose someone who can tolerate all of those differences. Someone who can deal with the differences among Klal Yisrael. And this is reflected in a passage in the Medrash Tanchuma, in Parshas Pinchas. Well known, kishem shein partzukos sehem shavin zelazeh kach ein daatam shavin zelazeh. Just as their visages, their appearance, every person's face is unique to him or to her. Similarly, their thoughts, their opinions, their personalities are different. Ela kol echad v'chad yesh lo dea b'fnei atzmo. So Moshe asked that kshanu mistalek mehen bevakasha mimcha im bakashta limnos alehem manhig, if you want to choose a leader for them, mane alehem adam sheisovel l'chol echad v'chad lefi da'ato, someone who can tolerate, someone who can have the empathy for every person. And who did Hashem say was the one for that job? Yehoshua. I think that the Torah here is hinting to something very important about Yehoshua and something about leadership. Yehoshua had that capacity to tolerate people, to recognize individual differences. He was melutzer lekahal because of that quality. But there is a danger to that quality. There is a vulnerability. Someone who is so understanding, someone who is so tolerant, someone who appreciates the differences in every person and all different opinions, he can somehow tolerate them all, he can deal with them all. Such a person is vulnerable, is susceptible to influence. And his leadership skill may be undermined as a result, his suitability to leadership. There's something remarkable that we find about Yehoshua we don't find about any other figure in all of the Tanakh in the same way. That is a turn of phrase which appears in Parshas Veschanan, and it appears later on in the Torah as well. The Torah says in Veschanan, V'tzavis Yehoshua v'chazkehu v'amseihu. Strengthen him and fortify him. And later on in Parshas Vayelech it says the same thing. It says, "Vayikra Moshe Yehoshua v'yomer elav le'enei kol Yisrael chazak ve'ematz." And again, a few psukim later, "Vayitzeis Yehoshua benun v'yomer chazak ve'ematz ki atas savias b'nei Yisrael el ha'aretz." Be strong and of good courage. Be strong and fortify. In the Sefer Yehoshua, we find that expression chazak ve'ematz 3 times in one perek. Chazak ve'ematz ki atah tanchil es ha'am hazeh el ha'aretz. Rach chazak ve'ematz. And then again, halutzi v'sicha chazak ve'ematz. Be strong and be fortified. You wonder what's going on. Was he a breakfast cereal? You know, be fortified every time, again and again. You don't find such a thing. It's strange. It's like a slogan. Without Yehoshua, why does he need the chizuk? And I think the answer is a keen insight into the nature of leadership, and especially Torah leadership. A leader, if he's going to be effective, if he's going to be successful, he needs to tolerate different people. He needs to be merutzel kahal. He needs to recognize that not everybody thinks the same way. They don't think the same way as him. They don't think the same way as one another. Everyone has different intelligence and different life experience and different opinion and different perspective. But at the same time, someone who has that capacity to appreciate others and to tolerate others is susceptible to influence. Can he really be a proper leader? And therefore Yehoshua needs that strengthening and that fortification. I think that is why Moshe had to pray for Yehoshua, because he knew that Yehoshua by his nature was susceptible to the influence of others. Even though he has his own opinion and he knows what's right, but if 10 people say differently, will he be able to stand up for what is right and what he knows is right against the influence of all those others? Well, the answer is yes. Yes, he did. Yes, he can. Yes, he did. But maybe Moshe Rabbeinu recognized that delicate balance and that need for supplementing or rather maybe compensating for Yehoshua's natural inclination to appreciate other people and to accept them for what they are, with that certainty of what's right and what's wrong. I don't know, again, if we can say it on in this context, or you have to edit the tape afterwards if need be, but once upon a time, when I studied psychology, we looked at some very interesting research in terms of influences. What is it that contributes to a person's choices in life and the personality that he has, or the opinions or the assertion that he makes? And one of the most profound influences, as really every parent is aware, is peer influence, what's called modeling. Because my behavior is inevitably influenced by what I see in others, and my opinions are even influenced by it. I remember one example, research was undertaken to test this, the extent to which a person is influenced by other people's opinions. And I had a group of people supposedly subjects. They had maybe 8 or 10 people in the room, and these were probably university students. And when researchers conduct this kind of research, they often have a confederate. Confederate means someone who is in cahoots, someone who is in collusion with the researcher. So they have a subject and they have a confederate. The subject doesn't know that the other people in the room are actually colluding with the researcher. He thinks they're all subjects. So you've got 10 people in a room, one subject and 9 confederates. And they say, we're testing to see how well people can judge relative sizes of pictures that they may see, of images from a certain distance. They may say we're testing for eyesight, or we're testing for speed of response or accuracy or something like that. So everything's okay, fine. They have a room, and the researcher holds up, let's say, a picture, or maybe he holds up an actual length of string. And he says, which one is longer? Are they the same size? Is the top one longer? The bottom one longer? And at first they're very easy, and then suddenly they get a bit more difficult where they're very close in size. And then at one point, he either has a stick or something like that, or two of them, and one of them is longer than the other. And yet, when they go around the room, each person says, yeah, they're the same size. They're the same length. Because they are colluding with the researcher, do you understand? And then finally they get to this last hapless fellow, and he's saying, what's going on? Am I hearing things? Am I seeing things? Are my eyes deceiving me? Most of the time, even though it's clear that one is longer than the other, if everyone else says they're the same size, he'll also say they're the same length. Because it takes remarkable self-confidence and certainty and faith in one's own intellect or one's own senses to contradict what so many other people have said. This is the challenge of Yehoshua, and this is the challenge of Jewish leadership. I just want to end with a comment of Rabbi Saul Salanter about a Mishnah, or Brisa really, at the end of Masechta Sota. The last couple of blocks in Masechta Sota deal with Yemos HaMashiach. And it says that Dor Sheben David Ba, the generation of Mashiach, is going to be a time of great upheaval and great turbulence. And we find many, many descriptions of the Messianic age, most of which are couched in metaphorical language, and it's difficult to know what it really means. But one of those expressions is Pnei Hador kepnei HaKelev. The face of the generation is like the face of a dog. And it's a little bit obscure. What is the meaning of this expression? So Rabbi Saul Salanter says as follows. Pnei Hador, the face of the generation, of course it refers to the leaders. Just like you said, the face of the country is the prime minister or the diplomat. They represent the country. Or you have a company, for example, and its face is it's the spokesman or the CEO or whatever it might be. Pnei Hador means the leaders of the generation. Pnei HaKelev are like the face of the dog. So what kind of dog, you know? Is it a Chihuahua, a Doberman Pinscher? You know, what kind of dog is it? Doesn't make sense. So Rabbi Saul Salanter says like this. Pnei Hador Pnei HaKelev means that the leaders do not provide genuine leadership, but rather, as a man who's walking his dog in the park, let's say he gets up early on a Sunday morning, and he goes out to maybe the Golders Hill Park or the Hampstead Heath maybe, and there's nobody else around, and the sun is shining, and the dog is romping, having a great time, and the owner of the dog is going for a walk. So the dog runs ahead at every turn, and then the dog turns around to see which way the master is going. When they get to a crossroads, so he turns around to see, which way should I go? So the dog appears superficially to be leading, but really he's looking over his shoulder to see which way he's supposed to go. When the master turns one way, so the dog turns that way as well. Says Rabbi Saul Salanter, Pnei Hador ke Pnei HaKelev means that the leaders of the generation are not actually providing leadership at all. They are just responding to the expectations of their polity. And this may have some merit in a democracy, but in terms of Torah leadership, it can be very damaging. He says a Rav has to provide that leadership. He has to know what's right, and he has to demonstrate what's right, and he has to decide what's right, recognizing the needs and the differences and the expectations of his following. But ultimately, it's his responsibility to provide that leadership. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yehoshua repeatedly, Chazak ve'emat. That's why Moshe had to pray for Yehoshua, because he knew that he had that combination of qualities. He had the leadership potential, but equally he had that susceptibility, that vulnerability. And this is why Yehoshua is remembered as the great successor to Moshe Rabbeinu, because he was able to combine those qualities in the right measure and ultimately bring Klal Yisrael into the land of their destiny. Thank you.